This week's mailbag is from Andrea. When planning on the front end saves you so much time in the middle of the process, finally sinks in. This week, I took the time getting my Friday workbox set up. I triaged and cleaned up my work email inbox by using filters and colored labels, and I got all my contacts imported and grouped into committee categories. And the Friday workbox fits so nicely into my wheeled locking case to travel back and forth to meetings and the office work in bad weather.
Do you have an Organize 365 success story? If so, we would love to hear about it. Please send us an email at customerservice@organize365 and tell us how you have taken back your home, your paper, and your life with Organize 365.
Welcome to the Organize 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. I have wanted to record this podcast episode for a long, long time, but I'm having a hard time putting into words these thoughts and observations that I've had for quite a few years. And the basic premise is this: our homes are businesses. Like the house that you live in, the family that you're a part of, you are a business. And the reason why I've had a hard time putting it into words is, one, like, I don't want to offend people. Like, I'm making families feel so clinical or so cold, like a business. Like, no, you could be a fun family business with a great company culture. But also, I just cannot get this idea out of my head. So last week, we talked about playing chess and checkers simultaneously. And the next couple of podcasts after this one, I'm going to talk about, like, what do different family entities in different phases of life look like through the lens of running your house like a business? So here's the bottom line. You could think your house is not a business. That's totally fine. But you should know, if you are an American, that the entire economy runs on your home business. Like, we are all home business owners. And when the American consumer is doing well, the country is doing well. And when the American consumer is not doing well, the whole country is not doing well. Like, our entire country runs on how the economy of your house is run. And one of the interesting things I learned during COVID is that, well, yes, e-commerce, once it got its legs under it and, you know, started doing the right things, the e-commerce and the physical products, goods, companies started to thrive during COVID because they figured out how to mail things to people's houses. And, you know, we got the supply chain going in that fashion. However, the majority of the United States economy is actually, I think it's like 70%, is actually service-based, which means, you know, getting your hair done, getting your nails done, traveling, vacationing, having a plumber come over, like anything service-based, not actually things that you can buy at a store and have shipped to your house. So the American economy is a very service-based, education-based economy, not necessarily physical-based, even though we're also bulging at the seams with our physical products, if you know what I'm saying. And if the American family is doing well, the American economy is doing well. The American economy cannot be doing well if the American consumer is not doing well. So we are a business, and the business of the United States is us. And sometimes, you know, when you think about it that way, you start to realize, oh, that's why when the price of eggs becomes so expensive, it is a newsworthy item because most people eat eggs. And if your egg budget went from like $2 to $3 a week to $12 a week, it blows your grocery budget. And that is a newsworthy item because the economy of your household is the economy of the whole United States. So this is important. So how then do I relate business to a family? And I want to do it in a couple of different ways. The first one is I want to talk about you or your spouse or someone in your family being the CEO of your business and someone being the COO of your business. And you can be both, and you can make different names for them if that's too corporate for you and you don't want to think about being a chief executive officer. You could just say you're a chief everything officer or a chief operations officer. You can come up with some other creative name that you want to be called that is not a CEO or a COO. But just for clarity purposes and instructional purposes, and to be able to take this vision that I have in my head and explain it to you so that you guys can give me feedback in social media and in the app, and I could see if I'm on the right page or not. You have to have a CEO and you have to have a COO in every single family. And you're either doing these activities or you're not doing these activities. Here's the thing. In America, if you start a company, you could be a startup, you could be an entrepreneur, you could be a solopreneur, you could be whatever. If you start and run a business and own a business, you can go bankrupt and you can lose your business. However, you don't, your family. Like, you're running a business. If you're not thinking this way, then your business exists. It just might not be as productive and profitable as you want it to be. And once you look at your family entity as a business, then you could see thinking this way will help you make better decisions, why planning days are so important and how they really focus in all of your efforts and your resources of time, talent, treasure in certain seasons of life, in order to move your family forward faster and create the impact that you want to make, which is ultimately what businesses do. Businesses are people that come together in order to produce something. Often in a business, it is a profit, ultimately so that they can have impact. Like, that is what a business does. So you, as an entity, you may be a solo business provider with a solo family. You may have a partner, you may have children, you may live with your parents, it doesn't matter, whatever, that entity, that household that you live in, you come together probably because you want to be happy and you want to have relationship. And if you have children, you want to create good humans that will go on to be independent humans in the world. And you want to have impact in your family of origin and your extended family and in your community. And you want to be part of a relational part of the United States. Like, a business, I have always defined work inside of Organized 365 as what we spend the majority of our 9-to-5 doing Monday through Friday, not in relation to how much income you earn. So luckily, since I've always had that definition of work, this is going to work just fine for me. Because in your business, you're probably not income producing, you're actually hugely expense draining. But there are a lot of things that you do inside of your business, your family business, that save you money and help your money go further and concentrate your money in the goals that you have for this season of life. So a CEO, chief executive officer, a CEO is in charge of creating the strategy that the company runs on, managing all of the capacity and resources at their disposal, and creating a plan for execution. Obviously, we do that in families. I mean, basically, when you do your Sunday basket, you are being a CEO, basically, because you're looking at, you know, what constraints do you have on you this week? What are the things that need to get accomplished this week? What is the goal that you want to execute? What strategy are you going to employ? How are you going to manage the capacity and the resources that you have? Planning, everything you do related to planning days, Sunday basket, driving to get onion rings so you can think about the future goal of your family, that is all CEO-focused work. The best example I have from my past of when I really started to get strategic as a CEO in my own family was when I was driving Joey to school, and I've told the story numerous times, but it really is a great example of driving him to school and back. We are all going to get our children to school, first of all, because they get to go to school, and then we get some time. But you're all going to get your children to school. How you get them to school and the goals that you have while you get them to school, that is the CEO mindset. So when I realized that it was going to be 30 minutes in the car each way with him each day and 2 hours a day for me of driving, I started to get intentional with that time. And so we did not talk every single day on the way to and from school, but I was always available and I was purposefully available. So if he wanted to talk or if I started a conversation that got in a good groove, I was available and mentally available for those conversations to invest in our relationship. And if you see Joey and I today, we have an amazing relationship. It's because of all of those drives. I know for a fact that is when I changed my parenting with him and I became intentional about being available to him. And that availability and those years of doing that created the relationship that I have today. You cannot just be next to someone and have the same relationship that you do if you set an intention and are purposeful and available. Secondarily, as a CEO, that half an hour drive back from school when I was by myself, that's when I started listening to podcasts and audiobooks in order to up-level my skill set so that I could become a future business owner. So that is how I really started taking ownership of that CEO role inside of my family. One, Sunday basket time. Two, the three times a year planning time, and really strategically thinking about what does my family, what does our business need? What are our goals? What are the outputs that I want to see in our family at the end of this trimester? So with Joey, it was building a relationship on the way to school. I've also shared this numerous times. My kids had IEPs. They had learning disabilities. School was a struggle. They did not do chores after school. It was just not an unrealistic expectation. Everybody would have ended up crying. Like during the school year, their job was to go to school and that was it. There was no other external pressure on them to do anything. So I then used the summer trimester as my golden window to teach the life skills that I deemed to be most important that I wanted my children to have when they turned 18, 19, 20 and left home and were adults. What were the things that they had to do? And I did teach them laundry the year they turned 18. Driving and laundry was the summer, the year that you turned 18. We got our temps when they were 16 or 17, but by the time they were 18, that's when they got their driving license. So that, like, yes, you probably did the driving hours with your kids and they got a license, but did you proactively think about when you were going to do that and how that was going to manifest? What are the adulting skills that you have that you need to pass on to your kids and when are those going to happen? For me, they were always in the summer. In the summer, I always had a learning goal for both of my kids that was life skills related and then a household organizing goal for myself. And I've done that for over a decade. The first 13 years of their life, my goal for the summer was to survive the summer. They are long, long. Summers are long. Camp is expensive. We could not afford camp. There are only so many vacation Bible schools you could put your kids in. I mean, three or four is fine, but and we did go to three or four, you know, free movie day on Tuesday. Like I had to plan out how to entertain my kids the first 13 years. But then the last 5 to 7 years of summers, it was okay. What life skill are we going to teach? And that's all CEO thinking. All right, let's talk about a COO. So what does a chief operations officer do? Well, a chief operations officer runs the day-to-day actionables that will accomplish the strategy that the CEO has left for the team. So whatever the goals or the rocks or whatever the CEO has decided is going to be the focus of the company for the trimester or the quarter, the COO is then charged with making that happen. Or as Dan Sullivan likes to say, I think it's Dave Ramsey. Is he the one that says there's a wow person and there's a how person? So the CEO is like, wow, we can do this summer. And then the COO is a person who's like, okay, well, if that's what you want to do, then we have to do all of these things. So like, if you want to teach your kids to drive and you want to teach your kids to do laundry, then we need to figure out when the driving hours are going to be, whose car it's going to be in, who's going to do it. And if it's going to be laundry, is it whenever they want to do it? Or do they have a certain day of the week they're doing it? How many Tide Pods is it going to be? What are the settings going to be on the washing machine? How are you going to do that instruction? Like, the COO is in charge of the operations, getting the thing out the door, coming up with the actionable plan that is going to achieve your outcome. And the commonality of both of these, the CEO and the COO, is that they are proactive and not reactive. You are never going to wake up a week from now and have a different body image of yourself or different health status if you don't make any changes in what you're doing today. Like if you don't walk more steps and eat more salad and drink water instead of soda, you're not going to look and feel better 10 days from now than you do today. Like if you do the same things today all the way for a week and then you want to see results, you're not going to see results. There has to be proactive, purposeful planning. And to this point, you may say, okay, well, that's interesting. But I really don't understand, other than labeling these activities that we do inside of a company, inside of our family, as a CEO or COO, how does this really relate to a business? How would you say it's related to a business? Oh, no worries. I have this all planned out. First, I want to go through the Friday Workbox colors and what they mean for an employer and then what they mean for an employee. And I have to credit Steph Ardoin for helping me with this 9 months ago when I realized that the way I run a workbox as a business owner is the exact opposite of how an employee processes a Friday workbox. So I'll start with how the business owner processes a Friday workbox. So they start with the pink slash buckets, which is where they put all of their marketing ideas and their future ideas for the company, because they have a million trillion ideas. So they're allowed to have as many ideas as they want. They capture them all. They put them in the pink slash buckets. Then we have purple slash buckets. And purple slash buckets are what the CEO decides is going to be the strategy for this next quarter. And you can only have 3 to 5 purple initiatives, period. No more than that. There is a limit. And those three to five initiatives are the products or the services that you are going to bring to the marketplace or provide enhancements on or do preparatory work for something new that is coming the following quarter. Then you go to the blue color, which is your team color. And this is the team, the operations team, that is going to make real whatever the CEO has just decided is going to be the strategy. They primarily do this through team meetings and then also through independent work. And then you go to green, which is the profitability and the financials of the company. That is what a CEO workbox looks like. Now, for people on the operations team and employees, you have those same exact colors, but you run them in the exact opposite order. And this is what Steph shared with me, which I thought is brilliant. So for the employee or the operations person, you start with the green color. And the green color actually has nothing to do with the CEO workbox at all. The green color is the color of your job description and the administrative repetitive tasks that need to be done every day, every week, every month, every quarter, and every year. And these tasks need to get done no matter what project we're running through the company or what the initiative is for this quarter. This is the making sure the website is up and that the rent is paid and that the finances are reconciled at the end of the month and the email has gone through and customer service. And this is the invisible work of business. This is the stuff that everyone has to do, but no one really realizes anybody is doing it unless it's not done. And it eats up like 30 to 50% of your work week. But you forget that you're doing it because you've always done it and you're the only person that does it. And so your boss also forgets that you do it. So they load more and more of this purple work on you and more blue team meetings. And then you can't figure out why you can't get out of the door at the end of the day. At the end, you know, you're working extra hours and you're working on the weekend. It's because this green work is invisible to you. So doing a Friday workbox helps you see this green work. So that's your project, your job description, your emails, all of the actionable things you do all the time that people don't even remember that you do. Next, you have your blue work, which is your meetings, the in-person meetings that you need to attend with people inside of your team. Then you go into the project work, which is the only thing that people really track inside of companies, is what new project are you working on and where are you on the deliverables? They forget about the meetings you had to attend for those projects as well. That is what gets measured usually. And then you have a small section of pink slash buckets. And this is where you put your ideas or process improvements that you see could happen in your department or visions that the CEO or the company has told you about, the mission, vision, values that you're working on. So inside of a business, there is the owner who is working from idea to projects to team to profitability. And the employee and operations team that's working from job description to team to projects to possible process improvements. Okay, now let's go to page 2. How does this work at home? And I have been thinking about this for years. And when I finally did it by colors, I was like, oh, this is it. This is it. Okay, so first, let's go through the CEO thinking at home. So the CEO starts with pink. They start with the planning. They start with the vision for their family. The day in, the day out, what do we want to have at the end of this trimester, at the end of this year, at the end of this season of active parenting, at the end of this season of my getting a PhD, at the end of this season of training for a marathon? Like, what are we ultimately going for? And this is the piece that, as a kid, man, we dream about everything. What do you want to be when you grow up? What are your dreams? What are you hoping for? And then we become an adult and it's like, when are you getting to work? How much do you make? When are you getting your next raise? Like, it's very not expansive. The pink work of being the CEO of your family is to be the chief dream officer. Like, to be in charge of, like, where is this bus going? Nobody else is running your household except for you. And where are you leading it? Like, how are you proactively planning where you and your family members will be one trimester, 1 year, 5 years, 10 years in the future? What will look different? Or are you going to keep repeating what you have been doing? And it is both scary and so empowering in order to realize that you have this full power to manifest whatever you can think of. Okay, so if you are really good at dreaming, you're like, no problem, I've got 89 different ideas of what our family can do. You need to couple that right then with the purple. That is going to be your projects for this trimester. And I'm going to stick with the 120-day trimester because this is what we do in planning day. And while you can think about what you're going to do 1 year, 5 years, 10 years from now, really our brains, there is science around this. Our brains can only think 90 to 100 days in the future. So you can really only see with crystal clarity the next 4 months, three, 4 months. And that's what we plan inside of planning day. So during the next 4 months, what projects are you going to turn into purple slash pockets that you want to make real for your family based on the vision that you have overall? Like, where are you ultimately going? And if that's where you're ultimately going, then what can you do in the next 120 days that will move you forward towards that goal? Now, at work, I say you can have 3 to 5 purple slash pockets. At home, I generally am only successful with one at a time. Now, you can pick 3 or 4 and you can have one per month, but it's hard to work on all four every month. You don't have to say, I'm picking something that's going to take me 4 months to fulfill. But if you want to pick 3 different things, only work on one at a time, complete it, the next one, and all of them will be done in 120 days. What I've learned as a goal-oriented person is that when you have too many goals going at one time, then you tend to dilute your efforts. But if you're only working on one goal at a time, then you put all of your extra thinking time and all of your extra minutes that you can find towards that goal. You accomplish that goal faster and you accomplish it with greater ease. So that's why I say I would focus on one at a time. Okay, next is blue. So blue are the people. Now, here's a difference in families versus businesses. You didn't hire these people. They just came with the house or somehow you have this family that you have. And these family members are unfireable. Like, this is the team you've got. This is what you're working with. There's no changing out team members here for the most part. Like, this is our team. This is our family. So finding the strengths of each family member in each season will help you move forward faster. And then for financial, there's definitely finances of a family. Like, there's no family that's not thinking about finances. And you need to be thinking about your cash flow, your supply chain, for crying out loud. So at the time of this recording, SVB Bank in California has just, there was a bank run and it literally went under in a matter of days, which is scary, right? And you think, oh, wow, for those businesses who did all their banking with SVB Bank, were not able to run payroll. All their credit cards got shut down. They did not have access to any of their cash. Luckily, it was only for a few days, but you can imagine the fear that went through all those CEOs that literally didn't know what to do. And because many of those businesses only did business with SVB Bank, they did not have banking relationships in other banks. And you can't just like walk in and be like, hey, I'm going to deposit $1 million in this bank tomorrow. Like, you have to have a relationship with the bank. And so literally what ended up happening Thursday night into Friday before the bank got shut down and while it was in the process of being shut down is that business owners were wiring business assets into private bank accounts in other banks, trying to get the money out of that bank. So they were wiring it directly into the CEO's private bank account. Or what many of them did is they also banked at the same bank. So what they did is they wired the money to their lawyers' bank accounts. just trying to get it out of this bank. And you may say, what does this have to do with our family? Oh, I could tell you exactly what this has to do with our family. I spent so much time trying to be organized and efficient and productive and in our banking that I got to the point where our family had every single entity and asset in one bank. My private company, our mortgage, all of our car loans, all of our credit cards, all of them. I got rid of like the extra like Discover card and whatever. And I only had this one bank's credit cards. We had like three different credit cards. We had multiple lines of credit. We also had a line of credit and we had Visa check cards for both the business and the personal accounts. And then we went on vacation. And this particular bank, when you're traveling, you need to tell them that you're traveling. There was this period of time. This was like probably 8 or 10 years ago. And you had to tell them every time you were leaving the state. And I forgot to tell them. So we're in Florida. And in Florida, you can shop at like the local Publix store, which is like down the street from the beach. Or like right across the street is like a Dollar Tree. So I went over the Dollar Tree or whatever. They have food there. Like they have all kinds of food there. So I filled up my cart. And I bought like $110 worth of stuff at the Dollar Tree. Let me just tell you, the Dollar Tree normal transaction must be below $100 because I tried to run my credit card and it got declined. And I was like, well, that's weird because there's plenty of credit on it. So I ran another one. It got declined. Well, I went through all of my cards and they all got declined. So I had like $20 cash. I just bought what we needed for breakfast. I was like, all right, I'll figure this out tomorrow. Obviously, there's something wrong with this store because it couldn't possibly be my credit cards. So I get home and I call the number on the back of the credit card. And sure enough, because I was trying to charge so much at the Dollar Tree, they assumed it was fraud. And because I didn't tell them I was traveling, shut down the credit cards. And because it was 8 or 10 years ago, it didn't get turned right back on again. Like it took them a while to figure it out and turn them back on. And that's when I realized we were sitting ducks. We had no access to any of our money because now they've shut down our Visa check card too. And I didn't have that much cash with me. And I didn't have any other credit card other than credit cards at this bank. And that's exactly how all these business owners felt at that SVB bank failure, is if you have all of your eggs in one basket, and even banks can go under, then you are vulnerable. When COVID started, how much toilet paper did you have? Like, what was your supply chain for toilet paper? What was your supply chain for what? Like, you need to have redundancies. You need to have cash on hand. Like, so we've had many of times in Cincinnati where the power is out for days at a time because of whatever hurricane that made it all the way up to Ohio or tornado goes through or whatever. And so the bank is not there. So you can't get your money out of an ATM, right? So Greg and I always have, you know, a little bit of money at the house. And that little bit of money is in low denominations. You don't want to have like a bunch of $100 bills. What good is that going to do you? You know, you need like 10s, 20s. And you need, you know, couple hundred dollars worth at least, so that if you can't get to the bank or if the bank electricity is down, you aren't like, oh my gosh, how am I going to get money? I have to drive 30 miles to get money. And you see what I'm saying? Like you are a business. You need to have multiple bank accounts. I now have an American Express card and a Capital One card and this bank's cards. And I've since diversified so that my business banking is in a completely different bank now. And so some of the things that we do to organize us and give us increased productivity, like consolidating all of your banking so that push of a button, everything is automated, is great when it's great, but it's not great when it's not great. And you as the CEO of your company need to know that you need to have diversification of your financial assets in the case of a bank failure. It could happen. Or an electricity outage for a couple of days. It could happen. And so you need to have those backups. Okay, so let's talk about the COO thinking. That was CEO thinking. I am always thinking this way. My fractional CFO said, okay, if we go into recession, what's your plan? And I like, brrr. He's like, okay, that is definitely a plan. Okay, what if this supplier, brrr. He's like, okay, you have really thought these things through. I'm like, oh yeah, this is all I do. All I think about is like, what could go wrong and how do I shore it up? Now, obviously, black swan events happen. COVID was a black swan. The SVB bank going out is a black swan. A black swan is an event that is nearly impossible to predict. That's probably, there's a better definition out there than that. I'm not Googling it, but you get the idea. So there are going to be things that happen in your family, unexpected events that you could not have been predicted. However, the more you plan, if you do a Sunday basket every single week, you know that your weeks have gotten pretty smooth. And if you've been doing Planning Day, you realize that there is a lot that you can plan that you didn't realize you could plan. Like just doing the holiday blitz, you now realize that, wow, you could be really, really ahead of the game going into the holidays. The back to school blitz that's coming up will set you up for an amazingly productive fall, whether or not you have children or not. Like you're going to learn so many productive things that you can do in the summer that keeps you out of the long lines once school starts. So being a planner, being productive, being purposeful just sets you up for so much success, but it does not eliminate 100% the inevitable of unexpected things happening. But it gives you a lot more bandwidth and a lot more resources when the unexpected actually do. Okay, so let's think about the COO and the tactical implementation of the plan that you make on planning day. So number one, your pink work is planning. Pink is always going to be your planning, your strategy, your future vision casting. You're thinking about what is coming and then processing through how you are going to maximize all of those opportunities. So your pink work as a COO is your Sunday basket and your planning time. Planning day is amazing. And I don't know where you would ever have the same experience that you do in our planning days of really looking at the next 4 months in the way that I look at the next 4 months, which is just Lisa-like. Like I really dive into where are you as a person? Where is your family? What's coming up in the next 4 months? Where is the economy as a whole? What are the trends that are happening? Like just everything. We go through everything and then you set your goals. And you need to have this pink time. You need to do your Sunday basket. And I strongly encourage that you do planning day once per trimester. But then you got to shut it down. You can't just do pink all the time because ideas and ideas and ideas don't become realities. And the goals of our planning, the reason why we're doing planning, is to create a new future for ourselves and our families and to achieve our goals. And so at some point you have to say, okay, roughly 90 minutes on Sunday and, you know, the weekend of planning day, you've got the 4-hour live event. And then I usually take the whole weekend to kind of plan out my trimester. Then you got to go into action mode. And that is what your purple is for. Your purple is for your projects. Figuring out what one, maybe two things that if you could at the end of the next 4 months say that this thing was done, this renovation project, this home organization section of your house was organized, this class was taken, this skill was learned, whatever it is. Like 4 months from now, I want to be able to say, I have done this, I have this, I am this thing. Now, working backwards, how do you achieve that in 120 days? And most things can be achieved in 120 days until you work on a big thing like a PhD. Then it's just a series of 120 days. And the goal is, once you articulate this, is to like put it on the refrigerator, tell the family about it, like make a big deal about it, and then harness every single minute that you have in that 120 days to think about and work on and plan and do whatever that thing is. And I love to try to accomplish that goal as fast as possible, usually before 120 days. Usually I can accomplish it in like 6 weeks. And the awesome part of that is then you can have the breathing room of the rest of the 120 days for another goal, if you want to pick another goal, or just to like live life until you pick the next goal. So that is how I do it with those goals. Next is your family, your blue. And so my purple project is usually either household related or me related. And then for blue, when I get to the blue family, I usually pick one goal per person per trimester. I don't always tell them what it is, by the way. You don't have to tell them. If you have family members that are listening and they want to do this as well, that is fabulous. I think these are skills that everyone should be working on. But for me, when I think about each family member, so right now that'd be Joey, Abby, Grayson, and Greg, what is it that I want to purposefully do in each of those relationships to either maintain and grow those relationships, or in the case of like little baby Grayson, like what skills do I see that he'll be doing in the next 4 months? How can I amplify and make easier those skills? So is there a toy that I want to buy? Is there a different way I want to rearrange the house or the rooms that he plays in? Does he need a big boy bed instead of a crib? We're moving to daycare instead of at-home care. Like what is the next thing that would support his development the most? The kid spins all the time. Like he just stands there and he spins like 100 times in a row, not fast. And his eyes track, you know, like when you're a ballerina and you have a focal point and you spin, he does that. And I'm like, could he be a dancer? Maybe gymnastics. Maybe we should put him in gymnastics. And whenever he's spinning like that, he's the most verbal. It's so cute. It's so adorable. He's just been doing it for a couple of weeks, but I'm always observing like, okay, it seems like he jumps like both feet jumping and he's, you know, 20 months. I think that's kind of old for jumping. Like little kids jump. This kid jumps all the time. So I'm always looking at like, what are his unique skills? And how can we kind of put him in like a little gymnastics class and see how he does in that? Or maybe there's a tumbling class that he can be in. Just to see like, what unique skills does he have that I can then further and grow to see how those are going to develop? I love to observe and then add a little bit and see what happens. Does he flourish in that aspect or does he get overwhelmed? And then I make iterations. Also, like when I'm looking at Abby, like, okay, what skill set is she working on as a parent, as an employee, as a homeowner? How can I support her in that? Like, so a great example is Grayson is allergic to eggs. So now we have EpiPens. And the EpiPen is not covered under his insurance. And so in the past, I'd be like, okay, I'll handle that. And I was like, no, she's the mom. This is a great learning opportunity. She needs to learn what to do if the insurance doesn't cover it. And so I said, download the GoodRx app and then let me know how much it is. So she downloaded the GoodRx app. And so to get these EpiPens would be like $800 normally. And she looked at both Walgreens and CVS. It was only a couple dollars difference. She goes, Mom, it's only $206. I said, yes, because when you use the GoodRx app, that's what it is. She goes, all right, I'll send it to you. You do it. And I said, no, you need to download this app. And every time anything isn't covered on insurance, then you run it through this app and you need to go in and you need to show it to them and you need to make the purchase. And, you know, in this instance, Greg and I are going to use our health savings account money to pay for that $200. So she's not paying for the EpiPens, but she is doing the work of learning how you would do that when that responsibility is on her, when she moves out, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So looking at your family members and your role as the COO of getting the work done, but not necessarily doing all the work. So that's what a good COO does. They manage the work, but they don't necessarily do all the work. And that is a skill I really had to teach myself because I love to just swoop in and do it and move on to the next thing because it's much more productive. So that's what I do with my family members. And then, like I said, the COO is in charge of the cash flow today and the future. Your supply chain, how you are filling your house, how often you go to Costco, what things you're buying, if you're cooking more from scratch to save money or you're buying more pre-made to save time. Like, where are you on the time-money continuum? Which one is in more supply? Neither are ever in unlimited supply. So which one are you going to focus on? So I would love to hear your feedback about this one, about... Do you see the parallels that I'm seeing here about the family being an economy and being a business? And you need to be both the CEO and in the strategy of your company, and then also the COO in the monitoring of the daily actionable to-dos that need to get done in order for the CEO's vision to become a reality. I am really looking forward to the next couple of podcasts I'm going to record. And I'm going to take a look at like, okay, so what does it look like if you're running your family as a business and you are in active parenting years? What does it look like if you're running your family as a business and you have a multi-generational household right now? What does it look like if you're running your family as a business and you live alone? Like, and each of those families are going to have different pink, purple, blue, and green goals. And I will walk you through those starting next week.